properly attacking, engaging in conflict involves the ability to degrade and prevent the functioning of services. We are not yet at a point where that is a demonstrated capability. It may be, but if so, it is spoken about in whispers or allegations without corresponding data. Now, does that mean there's no threat? No. One of the biggest challenges I think facing infrastructure companies generally come from two avenues. One, there is an effort to increase efficiencies, which we understand, but often that means letting remote operators access infrastructure remotely. And so that means that when and if a third party can intrude upon that remote operator's terminal, then you can start mucking about. The other sort of threat domain that we're seeing come up more and more often, especially with older infrastructure, say from, I don't know, the 1980s, I'll be generous and say to the early 2000s, although we still see the same problem with stuff built today. But you have what were arguably well-meaning engineers, and so there are backdoors, there are ways for companies that provide the infrastructure to remotely access sensor networks and infrastructure systems. And that isn't because like operators are going to go wild and turn off things, but rather it's for maintenance and things like that. But, I mean, much of that is now increasingly exposed to the internet, which means that any attacker, any party can try and gain access, and those credentials are quite often public source, so you can see how to get in. That's a concern. I don't think that we're at a point where, you know, the world is about to end. I have to be an optimist. I don't see it. There's also the question of what a lot of people, or a lot of the media at least, and many politicians have identified as quote unquote cyber war, cyber conflict, is quite often espionage in the 21st century. And so when you do have the massive invasion of computer systems that, you know, are attached or help operate critical infrastructure, there's all sorts of reasons to do that, right? It isn't just because we want to turn off the lights. It's also, you know, when you're dealing with, it's not just China and Russia, but I mean, we know that from the Snowden documents, the NSA regards Israel as one of the top threats. France is routinely accused of intruding upon other Western nations' systems and so forth. And sometimes it's for economic purposes, right? If we know that, you know, there's some part of the infrastructure that is ailing and clearly a contract's going to need to go out, then we can either directly or indirectly sort of use some policy levers or just flatly tell companies, you know, this is coming, get ready for the bid. And so, you know, the espionage aspect, I think, is often forgotten in this attack. It's not just to bring down, you know, the grid or something like that. It's to gain economic intelligence. And that's really valuable. I mean, also, if you know, I mean, Stuxnet was largely possible, it appears, because there was also some human involvement. I mean, you can remote in, you can do things, or you can try and get information about individuals and then target individuals through human intelligence or human security efforts. And there's no reason, I mean, we know that that still goes on. And there's no reason to believe that we should just see cyber as one piece. It's one part of a broader strategy.
What is the best advice you can provide to the youth interested in pursuing a career in security matters such as cybersecurity, terrorism, and critical infrastructure issue development?
I mean, I guess my core piece of advice is just do it. I get asked an awful lot, like, how did I or how did people I know get involved? And in all honesty, the world, I don't want to seem dramatic, because the world is on fire in the sense that, not that things are burning down, but there's so many policy issues. There's so many from a technical level, a legal level, a political level, a sociological level, right? You don't need to code in order to be involved in these issues. And you can just, if you're smart and you're writing smart things, like, you can just have a blog to start, in all honesty. I remember the best piece of advice I've gotten. I've heard it more than once from different people in different governments. Academic work is cool, but they often can't afford to access it. If it's open source and it's well done, they will absorb it, because there's many governments just lack analysts. And so if there's some niche issue, right, you're really interested in like how your regional power system works, or you're really interested in, you know, how cyber gangs work, or you're really interested in like how this piece of legislation could be improved, you know, whatever the issue happens to be, just get involved. I mean, this isn't a domain where there is necessarily a right answer, and usually there isn't. There are a bunch of different answers with different opportunity costs, and it's pretty rare to have all those opportunities properly costed out. And, you know, if you're interested, if you're involved, over time, in my experience, and I don't mean over time as in over 2 weeks, I mean, you know, over 2-3 years, if you're regular in your analysis, it doesn't have to be right, it just has to be smart, right? It has to be robust. People will pay attention. And you know, if it's on the political front that you're interested in, then you just figure out the MPs or the legislative assistants that are of interest. You find the committees that are hearing issues on stuff like this. You write your MP. And you can get these issues on the agenda with some effort. If it's the technical side you're interested in, then there's all sorts of other communities that, you know, you can do vulnerability reports. You can explain the significance of user interfaces, user experiences. You can point to unintended consequences of systems that are in development or that should be retired, and on and on and on. I think that really the key thing is that this is an area where if you are a stovepipe, I think that would be the biggest challenge. If you stovepipe yourself, or if you are just, quote-unquote, a lawyer, or you are just, quote-unquote, a technologist, or you are just, quote-unquote, a political scientist, then I think you tend to get a myopic view of what the world looks like. Doesn't mean you're a generalist, but you have to jump across disciplines, and you have to be pretty willing to learn and be pretty humble most of the time. And when you're able to do that over enough time, it's something the lab, and we still struggle with, we still try, it's still hard for us, and you know, we've been doing this a long time. But when you do it well, your work changes. This is why this bill is good or bad, because of whatever calculus. But it's an actual policy, political, technological intersection. And those are rare. And even if what you suggest never is taken up, which will probably be the case, influencing people in small ways matters. The best piece of advice that I received, actually, was from my my BA and also my master's advisor. He's the same person. He's had to flee from Iran. And I remember him telling us in a class, you know, if you can change one word of a piece of legislation, if you can have one sentence, if you can have one paragraph maybe, it's not rewriting the bill, small changes. And if enough people do that, it can be very influential, not just in connecting people to their democracies, but in slowly modifying law and politics. It's not fast. It will never be fast. If you're focusing them on politics and policy, it will always be slower. But that speed is deliberate, and it's intentional. Slow means that there have to be compromises. Fast means that, in most cases, not enough compromises were made, and you're going to be revisiting that issue in 5 years. So being in for the long haul, I think, is really important. And you can have no education, or you can have high school, or you can have an undergraduate, or a master's, or a PhD, or whatever else you happen to have. But just getting involved, it's really easy. I say this from experience on some issues. It's really easy to stand on the sidelines and say everything's going to hell, and this isn't working. It's really hard to get involved. And you realize, as soon as you do it, my experience, even people on the other side of the issues that you may fundamentally disagree with tend not to be inherently bad people. They see the world in a different way. And appreciating that, respecting that, and trying to work collaboratively to improve the policy makeup, I think that is the way to get involved, is a bridge maker, as a peacemaker. I think that that's the way that we move forward. There's been a lot of screaming at one another for the past decade, and we will continue to scream at one another. But I think that we really need to figure out how to work together more, or else we're just not going to have the progress that I think we need.
Dr. Parsons, I want to thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down and do this interview today. I really greatly appreciate your expertise in cybersecurity and in many related areas that we discussed today.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.